rats. I forgot the title. Episode 589, Love You to the Moon and Back. Just imagine we just edited those things backwards. Whatever. Welcome to Technorama 589 shows, and we're still trying to get it right. The format is loose here.
One day.
I didn't want to hit record twice. That's just what it comes down to. This is the show that takes a very lighthearted look at tech, science, apparently podcasting too, sci-fi and all things geek. If this is your first time joining us, thank you very much for joining us. And welcome back to all of our repeat viewers / listeners or whatever you're doing while you're going down the road driving. I'm Chuck Tomasi from Phoenix, Arizona. And joining me, is, as always, is Craig Stepp in South Carolina. How are you, Craig?
I'm doing good. I'm enjoying myself. Actually, trying to avoid all the hazardous weather that we've been having this week. You know, we had flooding. We had 70 degree days, 30 degree days.
Frogs falling out of the sky.
Tornadoes. And then another day, who was that? Somebody texted me and said, hey, it's snowing here. And I looked out the window and sure enough, it was snowing at my house too, a little bit. So we had a little bit of everything.
Lots of weather we've been having lately.
Yeah. What? Somebody posted, welcome to South Carolina. Winter is at 6:30. Fall is at 11, and then, you know, it just goes down the whole schedule. It's kind of the way it was.
You get every season in one day.
Yeah.
Pretty good. All righty. Let's do our feedback thing. I do remember how to push the purple button.
Hey, there you go.
Letters.
Header.
Oh, we get letters.
Letters.
We get your letters every day.
We have our question from last week is, what is your first memory of the internet? And before we get into that, Mike Robeson had a comment on Facebook, said, you don't have Summer Brooks to contend with. Wow.
Okay.
I never got into all that, but I've heard stories from the people who used to sit in this studio. Let's get into the comments from the Technorama podcast. We have Stephen Wetch. He says, his memory of the internet, I remember playing around with the inside of kids-only section of AOL. I remember sending Santa a letter at northpole.com. My first high-speed modem, in quotes, high-speed memory, is how amazed my dad and I were that we could stream a video of a news report.
That's awesome. Okay. Yeah, I remember being blown away the first time I really watched real video, you know. The real player.
Yep.
Yeah. It was small, but it was like, whoa, you know, just kind of blew your mind that kind you're seeing it live. I think I was like, the first thing I saw was like it was a baseball game that was being broadcast for some
reason. Or the graphics on the web browser were XBM bitmaps. It was like out of a newspaper or something.
Yeah. Right.
Edward Chase says, go for Archie and Veronica. I forgot about Veronica.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that.
Thomas says, acoustic modems and BBSs. Hey, that was my life for a number of years. Q-Link Absolutely. And the Commodore 64 from Mike Robeson. And John Kratzner says, slip accounts. Do you remember what slip stands for, Craig?
Vaguely.
Serial line internet protocol.
Yes.
I remember setting up slip and PPP, PPTP. To work one day on a NetBSD machine. Couldn't have done it myself. Scott Reynolds was there. Had a nice talk with him yesterday, by the way. All right. Okay. My niece, Samantha Bush, puts up a picture of the old Internet Explorer dialing progress.
Yeah. That is kind of funny to look
and,
at.
And the Netscape Navigator with the meteor shower. the old throbber that went by. I think
I thought Netscape was awesome back in the day. It really was.
At least their little animations of the progress bar. What turned into the progress bar were interesting.
When I went to the store to buy a copy of Netscape. It's like, was it $20 or something? It wasn't incredibly expensive.
My first memory of the internet. Get off the computer. I need to make a phone call.
Yeah. Yeah, that's valid. Can confirm.
Craig Glasner, Ranger Craig, formerly of Alcatraz, says, I remember wising for, maybe wishing for internet access back when I was on Genie and CompuServe and BBSs, but wasn't yet available to us mere mortals. Remember getting an email account from some group around 1992-ish? Oh, I can go back even further than that to get an email account.
Probably can.
CompuServe. What's a CompuServe? From Brian Parker.
Right.
There was Amy Bowen says, same visual as Samantha's above. We never had AOL or Netscape. First thing I remember doing was searching from the Yahoo and Alta Vista search pages for Star Wars surprise from Amy and finding mostly plain text HTML fan sites. Ooh, with the gray background. They were beautiful. You know, come to think of it, Facebook has a gray background.
It kind of does. Off to the side. Yeah.
Would BBS like Digital Exchange or Enterprise be considered? Enterprise was, I forgot Chad Struck was on that. Yeah, we used to run the Enterprise BBS. Chad was on there. He was a coworker of mine.
Hmm. Yeah, that's right.
Sean Brockman, CompuServe at 1200 baud. Let's see. I thought there was one in here that really made me laugh this afternoon. I can't find it.
Actually, I got one right while you're looking for that. My buddy Brian Davis. He says he remembers his, I guess this is his first memory, being at my house on Ebenezer Avenue Extension, which is here in Rock Hill. Said we stayed up half the night surfing the net for the first time on a non-work LAN, same place when we hooked up computers to play MechWarrior 2.
Jonathan Strickland has a similar one. Telnetting into chat rooms, MUDs, and MOOs, MOOs. Everything before that was BBS-based for me. Yes, it seemed to turn from BBS to, I mean, there's a natural progression for a lot of the BBS people to go directly onto the internet. April Hebert. Wow, we haven't heard from her in a while. This is a good question, yeah. Craig. You really got the people coming out of the woodwork for this.
I know,
this
right?
One.
Yeah.
She says, I remember back in the mid-90s, there was a BBS called Wesley Crusher Die, Die, Die. Actually, that was a Usenet news group.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Seriously, I wish I could find it now. Don't get me wrong. I love me some Will Wheaton, but come on. That's hilarious and awesome, right?
Hey, my buddy Jason Jones says, sending an email and then hearing the server dial up to the internet via 38400 modem. And then sending the email and then disconnecting from the internet.
I think my sister also connects with my first. I remember last week when you brought this question up, I said there's a number of things that could possibly qualify. And she said the two computer lab, that's that the lab had two computers in it at the high school with the phone cradle to connect to the internet. Actually, the phone was connected to a deck writer hard copy terminal. It wasn't even technically a computer. And that dialed up to the university that was about a half a mile away. And we would play, I don't know how anybody even got credentials to this thing, but we just log in and play tic-tac-toe or something. It was
right.
Like, wow, that was interesting.
I think my first computer I really got online was, I remember seeing somebody hack some an IP stack on it, but that's different. I got a computer and it had Windows for Work groups on it. And I met my roommate.
The Winsock.
Yeah.
Extension.
Yeah, my roommate had his brother-in-law worked at had a local ISP here, and he came over and was like, yeah, I can get you online. And he set it up and set up the internet. And I remember just messing around, just trying to think of stuff to go do. And yeah, it's, I don't know. That was it. I think IRC is my biggest thing. Once I figured out IRC and I was chatting with somebody and they said they were in the Mediterranean or something, who knows where they were at, but just, you know, chatting with people around the world, but I thought it was really cool. IRC, man.
Fight on it.
Hey, we used IRC at the beginning of our show.
We did. Original live chat.
Yeah, I even wrote a bot. Remember the fridge?
Yep.
People could open the fridge from a command in the IRC chat room and get a beer out of the fridge.
Or put something in the fridge.
Or put something in the fridge. I think we had bananas in there one time. Yeah.
Oh, man. We're going to have to. I'm sure we could revive that if you wanted to do a little Facebook programming. We got other things to do these days.
Okay. We'll table that one, but all right, we'll keep it in the back pocket.
Thank you very much, everybody, for your contributions. We'll have another show, another question at the end of the show, and we will post that to social media as well. Very much appreciated. And let's go on to the history. That comes next, usually. On this day in history, for February 12th, 2020, this is the 43rd day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are 323 days remaining in 2020. It was on this date in 1855 that Michigan State University was established.
And it was also on February 12th, 1909, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, NAACP, was founded.
How prophetic that it's now Black History Month in February.
That's right.
That works. On February 12, 1950 in Washington, D.C., the first stone of the Lincoln Memorial was put in place.
And it was also on this date in 1924 that George Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue received its premiere in a concert titled An Experiment in Modern Music in Olean Hall. Olean? Is that how you say it? Olean Hall, New York, by Paul Whiteman. And his band, with Gershwin playing the piano.
Also on this date in 1947, the largest observed iron meteorite until that time created an impact in Sikoti Alin in the Soviet Union.
And it was also on this date in 1961 that the Soviet Union launched the Verna 1 towards Venus. Go that way!
Fetch Venera 1. Hey, it was February 12, 1963, the construction began on the Gateway Arch in St. Louis, Missouri.
And February 12, 2001, near, NEAR, Schumacher spacecraft touches down in the saddle region of the 433 Eros, becoming the first spacecraft to land on an asteroid.
Awesome. Happy birthday goes out of the state to French chemist and academic Bernard Courtois, born on this date in 1777.
And French physicist and chemist Pierre-Louis Dulong was born 235 years ago today.
We got a lot of French today for some reason.
Oui, oui.
Heinrich Lenz, German-Italian physicist and academic, was born that same date in 1804.
And born February 12, 1877, French engineer and businessman co-founded Renault, Louis Renault.
He co-founded Renault Louis Renault.
So good, he named himself twice.
American astronomer and academic Lincoln LaPaz was born 123 years ago today.
And French mathematician and philosopher Jacques Pierbon was born on this date in 1908.
More French. See how it goes?
Yes.
Born February 12, 1915. He'd be 105 today. Old Commander Adama and Pa from Bonanza. Lauren Green.
And also born on the same date in 1954, American cryptographer and programmer Phil Zimmerman.
Also turning 64 today is American actor and talk show host Arsenio Hall.
American actor. Yeah, it was a thing. American actor Josh Brolin is 52 today.
Thanos? He looks much older than that.
Yeah, that purple really weighs on you.
Also turning 40 today is American actress and producer Christina Ricci.
Yep.
The little girl from Addams Family is 40. We're getting old.
I mean, right? No offense. I thought she was probably a little bit older, but wow. Okay, 40.
Listener birthdays this week include our good old friend Douglas E. Welch on the 14th. Also on the 14th, St. Patrick's Day. St. Valentine's Day. Andrew from Illinois. It also happens to be Jack Mangan's little girl. I think she'll be 2 this year. Philip from Australia, whom I saw a little over a year ago, is on the 15th. Long time listener, but way back when. Bob Trait of Megapodtastic and Action Figure Junkies is on the 17th, and two birthdays on the 18th include Hot John Miller of Megapodtastic.
Right.
It's a good title. And Ray Insolaco from Central Village, Connecticut. Happy birthday to all of you. And if it happens to be your birthday and you're not on the calendar, we wish you all the best anyway. But if you really want to be special and get your name on the show, you go over to chuckchat.com/wiki and you put your name in there and we'll give you a shout out at the appropriate time of year, even if it is 365 days from now. We're going to get to it because that's eventually what we do. And that's the way it was on this day in history for February 12th, 2020. I don't think we're anywhere near the end of this song, but...
Nah. Just run him out the door. Run him out the door.
Nah, yeah. Out, out, out!
Yeah. Get out!
I ought to get some music like a bunch of people running with this. Yeah.
Thanks for coming, but get out.
We have... Oh, we'll just play this one.
Good news, anyone!
We have a... excuse me. Bad timing on that. Whatever it was.
Yeah, no kidding.
From the Washington Times, cutting-edge science OCD drug designed by artificial intelligence. We have a couple of AI kind of stories in here.
This
today.
Is how they're going to take over the human race.
I'm sure
engineering some drugs.
Two pharmaceutical companies have embarked on a brave new world, having begun human testing for the first time on a drug treatment for obsessive-compulsive disorder designed by artificial intelligence. British startup Exscientia. Not quite as...
Sounds like something Stan Lee used to say.
I know. And Japan's Sumitomo Dainippon Pharma. Wow, these are great names that I can't pronounce.
I'm loving this.
We'll just call it SDP. used artificial intelligence to create the drug in less than 12 months, cutting 4 years from the average time it takes ordinary humans to develop medication. Exscientia CEO Andrew Hopkins described the clinical human trial of the drug, a molecule called DSP. Oh, I thought I just said that. No, I said SDP for the other place. DSP-1181 as the key milestone in drug discovery. Our driving motivation is to accelerate the range of innovative drugs, because he's from Britain, he says it that way, from cutting-edge science entering into the clinic to increase the treatment options for patients. That means reducing the time to make and test a drug. The consumer should see benefits from the faster progress to the clinic, Mr. Hopkins told the Washington Times. Artificial intelligence has been used to quickly and accurately diagnose diseases and analyze patient data. But this time, it had a more robotic, quote, hands-on role with the creation of the medicine. The AI created the drug by using algorithms that sifted and sorted through compounds to determine the safest and most effective one for treating a specific disease. Interesting.
I'm curious how well that actually works out. With the AI actually developing it, wonder how it works.
If it shaved 4 years off of the research and development part of this thing,
that's pretty amazing.
We could be moving towards a cancer drug sooner than we think. So I'm all for that if AI is helping us out with medications.
Yeah, as long as they're not trying to medicate us, sedate us, and take over the world.
Talked about the internet before. We have an article here that predates the internet. Well, the technology predates the internet.
Absolutely.
What's the mission this week, Craig?
Well, it turns out that, and I think we talked about this a little bit ago, or at least I read recently that they lost contact with Voyager 2, but they actually brought it fully back online, and it's 11.5 billion miles from Earth. Imagine the gas to get that far out. Anyway,
well, the Enterprise will find it soon, and then we'll find out what V'ger really is.
V'ger! In an incredible feat of remote engineering, NASA has fixed one of the most intrepid explorers in human history. Voyager 2, currently some 11.5 billion miles from Earth, is back online and resuming its mission to collect scientific data on the solar system and the interstellar space beyond. On Wednesday, February 5th at 10 o'clock, NASA's Voyager Twitter account gave a good news. Voyager 2 is not only stable, but it's back at its critical science mission. My twin is back taking science data. And we're not talking about lore. Get it? All right. Science data and the team at NASA is evaluating the health of the instruments of their from their brief shutoff. So Voyager 2 is a sister craft of Voyager 1, of course. Both have been traveling through the solar system and now beyond it for the last 4 decades, which that's just mind-blowing in itself. Together, they have transformed our understanding of our interstellar neighborhood, and they are already revealing unprecedented information about the interstellar space beyond the sun's sphere of influence. Now, talk about some ROI.
Yeah, you know, but it's back at its critical science mission. Beep. Still nothing out here.
Yeah.
We're still nothing alone. Out here.
Still alone.
Interstellar space. Empty.
Yeah.
Interstellar space. Empty.
Yeah. I mean, everybody's aware when they launched the thing, but still, it's just mind-blowing to think it's been floating out there or flying out there for 40 years and still working.
Power source is still working. That's even more amazing.
You know, I tell you, sometimes when they were talking about remotely reconfiguring this thing, you think how far away it is. And here I am sometimes having trouble with remote desktop to a Windows machine.
Well, like, speaking of far away, it's not getting any farther away, but it will be back for another visit there's actually a website now called whereisroadster.com to help you track Elon Musk's Tesla that he launched with Starman. You can find out where is Starman, where is the vehicle. The current location is 215-035-930-928-926-924. This website updates in real time. Miles.
Yeah, but look, there's a reason. Go ahead and read those.
It's getting
I'll tell
closer.
You what.
The car is 95,918,758.756 miles.
Don't read it in real time.
Okay. It tells you all the stats on the cars, and there is a little map that draws in rather broad strokes and shows you where it is and where it will be and when it'll come around, close approach to Earth, that kind of thing as it goes around. So happy, fun website just to check out where the Starman and his Tesla are.
Well, the reason it's on here is because if you look at the very bottom statistic, it's just at the 2-year anniversary.
Has it been 2 years since they launched that already?
2 years, 3 days, 6 hours, 12 minutes, 13 minutes.
Why does it feel like it was just about 6 months ago?
I know. Oh, well.
Come on. But, 2 years already?
Yeah. But wait, you know what? What was so cool about this whole thing? And I know there's a lot of people that can have the same kind of feeling, but I was genuinely excited to see that thing when they finally got it in space. It's just amazing. They threw a car up there and it's sent it on its way, you know, electric car, no less. I just thought it's one of those things that NASA should probably do a little more of to get people more excited about space. You know?
When it makes the next approach to Earth, it comes back. It's all like drunk and partied out. He's got stuff written on his helmet.
Yeah. The tires, there's cinder blocks under the tires. Actually, they were talking about there was an article that went along with this. They were talking about the state of it. And by the time it comes back around, they're curious to see what, you know, how any space debris or whatever, just the radiation itself.
Yeah, I think they said the rubber and vinyl things will go first. The leather, the most organic bits will, the radiation from the sun will take care of those in pretty short order. And then eventually the paint will come off from little micro specks.
Yep. Yeah, that's why I'm curious. I'd love to see it. I don't know if will we be here when it comes back around?
Yeah, it's like every couple of years it's going to be around.
No, I mean, it's got to come. It's going to come back around towards Earth.
Right, it will. Check the little map. It will be back in 2021.
The orbital period is 557 days.
Yes.
Okay, good.
Which is just under 2 years, but we will be at a different point in its orbit. Because it goes out
past the
orbit of Mars.
Episode 700 at that point. Maybe.
Check back with us then. All right.
Yeah. Stay locked in here, kids. We'll update you on that one.
In the meantime, we are going to take a real quick break and be right back because we're old and need a nap.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Dean Hagel from The X-Files, and you're listening to Technorama with Chuck and Craig.
I want to believe.
Greetings, programs.
And applications.
I'm Ben.
And I am Keith, and we are
the Two Gay Geeks. We are the nerds behind TG Geeks Webcast,
where we talk about sci-fi,
comics,
film,
horror,
genre.
You name it, we talk about it.
We release an episode every Monday morning at 6 a.m. Eastern.
You can find us on iTunes, Blueberry, Spreaker, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio.
Also, look us up on YouTube. And of course,
we can be found at tggeeks.com, where you can find not only our webcast,
but articles about other geeky goodness.
So come along for the wildest ride in the potosphere.
Did you just say potosphere?
Enzo was online earlier. Don't know if he's still out there, but how you doing, Enzo? He used to be on my team when I worked back on the help desk days.
Oh, yeah. I think I've heard you say that name
thank
before.
Thank you very much. Shout out to the chat room. Let's see who you have in Facebook that we've gone by. We read a few.
Well, it's kind of interesting because I did the watch party.
Yeah.
So I see a few people I know. Okay. Michael Kilby,
yep.
Jay Langajans, and then Mike Robinson, Mike Wills. And it's a Mike night.
It's a Mike night. Grab your mic. I've got mine.
Yeah. Oh, Mark B. Lee joined. He, remember we spoke to him just a few weeks ago on the topic of Trek.
Well, there you go. Wow. Okay. You must have made friends with him on Facebook.
Yes. I can't get rid of him now.
Apparently neither.
He's everywhere.
Neither can CBS.
Right. Yep.
We've got Mark B. Lee was in here. Craig Stepp, Fionn Chow. Janelle Keplinger, old high school friend, mentioned Everett Thompson, Jeremy Olke, longtime listener, and Michael King. I think we mentioned them all. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. You can join us.
Tim Elliott's there, by the way.
Oh, the Tim Elliott.
Yeah, he's a staple.
All right. You can join us. We try to do this Sunday nights at 9:30 Eastern time. So we want to see you there. You can also join up with the Facebook page, Technorama Podcast, and you get the alert when we go live or when Craig or I share it. So thank you for hanging out with us. This is just, it's not any special event on Sunday night, so we're getting more than usual. Usually somebody's like, oh, it's Grammy night or Oscar
it's the Oscars.
Night. Is it the Oscars tonight?
Yeah.
Wow, they must really suck if we're getting this kind of turnout.
Who cares about the Oscars? I mean, you know. You know, actually, when I was a kid, I would pull for movies that I really liked.
Yeah.
You know, but now I'm like, okay.
Yeah. Oscars, eh? We'll find out in the morning when you watch Good Morning America how they did.
Yeah.
So thank you very much for everybody who joined us. Let's do a little bit of that Remember When stuff because I enjoyed this first one. Neural networks have upscaled an 1896 film by the Lumiere brothers, and it looks like it was done in 4K on somebody's smartphone standing on the train station dock. So there are lots of valid reasons to be worried about how deep learning techniques could potentially be used to manipulate footage for nefarious reasons, but as Dennis Shurayev demonstrates by upscaling some old black and white film footage from 1896, those AI-powered tools can also be used in a powerful way to bring the past back to life. When watching old film footage that's plagued with excessive amounts of grain, gate weave, soft focus, and complete lack of color, it's hard to feel connected to the people in that clip or what's going on. It looks like a movie, and over the years, the medium has taught our brains that what they're seeing on screen might not actually be real. I mean, it had the jitter. It had the big flakes of stuff that came right in and took over the screen. The people were walking fast. But by comparison, the experience of watching videos of friends and family captured on your smartphone is completely different thanks to 4K resolutions and high frame rates. Those clips feel more authentic, and while you're watching them, there's more of a connection to the moment, even if you weren't actually there when it was being shot. So in 1896, Louis Lumiere, one of the famous Lumiere brothers who helped pioneer motion pictures and the equipment used to capture moving images on film, shot a short film titled, and I'll do my best, L'arrivée d'une train en gare de la Croix.
I'm glad you took that, not me.
Okay, it says the train comes into the station, basically. It
right.
Featured a train slowly chugging into a station. The short 45-second clip is most famous for several urban legends regarding moviegoers running out of the theater during showings back in 1896, terrified that an actual train was about to come plowing through the screen.
Okay. Well, look at the...
Imagine what they would have done.
The Foley artist is awesome.
If they'd seen 4K...
Right.
Whether the film actually had that effect on early audiences may never be proven, but given how new and novel the medium was, the short clip certainly would have been a unique experience to someone who had never seen movie footage before. The clip, named in French that I can't pronounce, doesn't have the same effect on modern audiences, but Denis Shereyev wondered if it could be made more compelling by using neural network-powered algorithms, including Topaz Labs' Gigapixel AI and Dane, to not only upscale the footage to 4K, but also increase the frame rate to 60 frames per second. You might yell at your parents for using the motion smoothing setting on their fancy new TV, but here the increased frame rate has a dramatic effect, drawing you into the action. And it really is amazing what came out of that. I mean, you can see the aggregate that's down by the rails. It looks like the leaves had just fallen, or the stone was freshly raked or something. It's like, wow.
I'll tell you what really caught me as well. As the train goes by, the reflection on the paint.
I didn't notice that.
Yeah, you can see a really clear. I mean, it's a reflection in the paint, but you can see a really good reflection in there. It's like there's no way you would have seen that before.
And they took the jitter out of it too, because the movie, the camera looked like it was handheld almost. There was a lot of motion going on. This stabilized it. The train is one smooth, contiguous motion. The people are walking by. You can see buttons on people's outfits. You can see the hair in the mustache of the guy that walks by. It's impressive. It really is.
One other thing it did really enhance was how uncomfortable these people must have been in the clothing.
It looked like the big wool suits.
You know what? I was just watching the movie Lincoln. I had not watched.
Oh, really? Before. Okay.
It was on Netflix, and I was like, you know what? I hadn't seen that. I'm gonna watch it. And watching Lincoln was helping Mary Todd undo her corset.
Yeah.
And she took her dress off. He helps with the corset. That drops to the floor. And she's still got an undergarment on. I'm like, wow. She had like 3 or 4 layers of clothing.
Yeah. And we feel bulked up when we're wearing like a t-shirt, a shirt, and a hoodie.
Yeah, it's hot in here. Yeah.
Well, anyway, you got to remember, they didn't have, you know, the modern heating that we do either. So, you know, one Franklin stove per household probably wasn't going to do much for you.
Yeah. Why don't they run the Zapruder film through this?
Ooh. Hey.
Yeah, you know, I started thinking, what are the films? The Bigfoot.
The Patterson footage from Bigfoot. Yeah. You may learn more than you want to learn out of that one.
Millions of dollars of computing power. Hey, let's run Bigfoot through here.
Find out if it's a hoax or not.
Yeah. But yeah, I started thinking of what films would you want to run through that. And then the Kennedy stuff or whatever that came through my head.
That's a good one. Why don't you write them back? Say, hey, go get your hands on the support.
I would subscribe to a YouTube channel if they just upscaled stuff all the time, you know, just to check out some old films. I think it'd be cool.
That old First Kiss. And put the piano music back in. You got to put that old timey piano music back in there.
Actually, you know, it'd be cool if they added all the sound effects in there, you know, train coming in.
They
the
did.
People just, oh, I muted did. It. If
you
I'm want, sorry.
Yeah, no, it's there. You hear the and then people talking as it go by. Because originally it had the, Well, the one that I watched on YouTube from the original had the old-timey piano music. And like an old Laurel and Hardy movie or something. Yeah. All right, let's go on to another one. Yes. Because we've seen something like this at the Computer History Museum.
Yes, we did. That's what caught my eye.
Here, the Computer History Museum.
Hey, by the way, Tim Elliott said he saw Harry and the Hendersons, and it looked pretty clear.
That was the Patterson Bigfoot film.
That's
what you get out of it.
Clear evidence right there, Tim.
All right. Tell us about computer memory of the old days.
So, we were talking about women in technology, and then we were talking about black women and their contribution to technology, science and math. And then you look at this and you say that women used to weave stuff, and this is where they hand woven memory.
Yes, because core memory was like these ferrite donuts that were on a grid in the old mainframes.
Yeah, actually, the ones we saw at the Computer History Museum looked like a window frame or some sort, you know, and it had all of them
to keep the flies out.
Yeah, that's what it was, the bugs.
No. Ooch.
That's a low hanging fruit.
Keep the bugs out of your computer.
So computer technology from yesteryears look comically primitive and bulky. One popular image frequently shared in social media sites show a large cupboard sized box lifted under the cargo bay of a Pan American Airways flight. The caption accompanying this image identifies the box as an IBM 305 RAMAC.
Yep.
The world's first commercial hard disk developed in 1957. It had a whopping capacity of only 5 megabytes.
That was a lot. Back then, that was a ton.
You generate that much, that many megabytes on your mobile phone just downloading a website.
You can't even open a Word document for that anymore.
That's right.
Here you go. In the early Hello world. 11 meg. Thanks.
Yeah, 11 meg. In the early days of computing, memory technology permitted a capacity of very few bytes. The first electronic computer developed during the Second World War to help the military calculate artillery firing tables used vacuum tubes to store data.
No, they weren't. The artillery was not firing tables. That's not.
What is it? Artillery firing tables. No, they
helped the military calculate. Yeah, I know. I'm just kidding. Anyway,
I know. It just sounds funny. John Presper Eckert then invented a complicated device using mercury-filled glass tubes, quartz crystals that could store up to a few hundred thousand bits, a vast improvement from earlier memory technology.
We saw some of those, except you can imagine what happened with the mercury, and they looked almost like bombs. or the rotary engine on an old airplane with the...
Yeah.
It was... really bizarre looking.
Yeah. So I was going to skip ahead here and talk about magnetic core consists of tiny donuts of ferrite material strung onto wires into arrays. Each donut would store a bit.
Yep.
The value of the bit, 0 or 1, was identified by the direction of their magnetic flux.
Yep.
The wires that ran through the holes and the donuts could both detect, that is, read and write, change, the magnetic cores, or the magnetization of the cores. Core memory became the dominant memory technology during the first two decades of the Cold War, but manufacturing was a delicate job, and the cores were tiny and had to be threaded by steady hands using magnifying glasses. As cores got smaller, engineers joked that the new cores were made of from holes punched from the previous generation, of course. So anyway, like all crafts involving weaving, sewing, and other forms of textile making, that was been historically associated with women. The job of weaving core memory was also entrusted to women. During the first Apollo missions, software of the Apollo guidance computer was physically weaved into a high density storage called core rope memory, which was similar to magnetic core memories. Okay. To build the memories, NASA hired skilled women from the local textile industry, as well as from Waltman Watch Company, because of the precision needed to work around those cores with a needle. So sitting across from each other on the desk, the women would pass the wires back and forth through a matrix of eyelet holes, each comprising a magnetic core bead. Passing a wire through the core created a one, while passing the core created bypassing the core created a zero. So the core rote memory was nicknamed LOL memory.
I'm sure it didn't stand for laughing out loud,
which is what we're doing about this anyway. So the LOL stood for little old ladies. Boy, they really gave these ladies some respect, didn't they?
No kidding.
Anyway, they were supervised by rote mothers. It keeps on going.
Who were often
males.
Males.
And the rote mother's boss was a woman named Margaret Hamilton.
Okay, so we've shown you some pictures. There's a whole bunch over at AmusingPlanet.com. You can find the show notes by going to our website, chuckchat.com/Technorama, episode 589. And there are a ton more pictures. They are wonderful, wonderful bits of history. You'd think there would be a machine that came along after some time to do this rather than
I think you'd have to.
People passing this back and forth. Because as the computers got more sophisticated, just like today, you need more memory. And I can just see, hey Francis, we're going to need a 4K sheet. Oh, my gosh, that's going to take us all month.
Guess what? Get ready. They're talking about gigabytes.
Janet, yeah, we got a 4 gig SD card that needs weaving.
Yeah, they're talking about a megabyte, so get your weaving on.
All right. That's a lot of fun stuff. Great history. Great. More to the story. More pictures if you go to our show notes. Thank you. Thank you very much. And while we're on the thank you wagon, I want to thank our patrons. They are the people who keep this show running. We just show up and tell you funny stories. But people like Kyle Nishioka, Abner Braverman, Ben Vaughn, Mike Wills truly appreciate it because we've got the annual 5-year hosting coming up really soon. It's about to auto-renew.
And it's like the third time we've done that.
I don't know if we've been doing it at 5 years at a crack every time, but
that means
it's been renewed twice in this household, so we're on track. Mega Podtastic, thank you, Night Gig Studios, Gary Lindros, John Clifford, Leon, John Noble, Chris MC.
I'm not saying it.
Alexis Duran, you're not saying Alexis Duran? Saturday Morning Media, thank you, Steve Therian, Jorga Schrawin, Amber Elstad, Harold McKinstry, Amy Bowen, Denise Inglis, Stephen Wetchie. There's a number of names that we've already said as we were reading out those funny comments. Dean Jensen, Dandy Man, NCAF, Matt Baum, Christina, and our latest and greatest Brian Bound. But there's more space on this table. We'd love to include your name, get it enshrined in the show, and get you your special content that only our listener, only our Patreon patrons get.
There's one field open, and see, the AI has not delivered my OCD medicine.
I knew you were going to tie it back to that.
So we need to deal with that.
Patreon.com/Technorama Podcast, as little as a dollar a show. And I love the fact that Mike Wills donates $1.01.
Yeah, nice.
101. So you can donate whatever amount you like, because the nice thing is, on those weeks where we have a week off because of work or family or whatever, you don't have to. It doesn't come out of your paycheck. So we produce, you win.
Hey, that's not how I set it up. I'm just kidding.
Okay. Yeah, we're going to do that minute show and get a dollar for every minute we do.
That's right. Yes.
So thank you very much for all of that. And we're going to let this band go. Okay. Bye. Kick them out.
See ya.
We get that record scratch noise.
Yeah.
Which brings us up to our last article in the Geek Library, which is that green button.
There you go.
Good way to slide into the end of the show. Oh, and very appropriate for this article, too. So So take it away. The music is very telling of the story.
I want to believe. Anyway, so the United Kingdom is releasing nearly 60 years of UFO reports online.
USO reports? Bob Hope is coming to Malaysia.
I know. Once again. Anyway, no one country has a monopoly on UFO reports. Sometime between the Roswell incident of 1947 and Canada's Falcon Lake sighting in 1967, which you don't hear a lot of except for the Roswell.
Unless you live in Falcon Lake.
Yeah, I didn't even know that existed. Anyway, the United Kingdom's government started collecting official X-Files of its own. Now, Live Science reports the country's Ministry of Defense will share those formerly classified documents with the public for the first time.
Online, on this thing called the interweb.
Yeah, so this is maybe your last memory of the internet.
Ooh.
So UFO mania has invaded the UK by nearly by the early 1950s. The British media began covering supposed extraterrestrial phenomenon with a more serious tone. Books with titles like The Riddle of the Flying Saucers and The Flying Saucers Are Real. That's pretty direct. That's pretty on the nose, wasn't it? Were excerpts from major newspapers. Even Winston Churchill was intrigued, writing to his air minister in 1952.
Okay, do it this in your best Winston Churchill.
What does all this... I don't know what he sounds like. What does he sound like?
What
you do it.
Does all this stuff about flying saucers amount to? What can it mean? What is the truth? We shall fight them in the air. We shall fight them on the beaches. We shall fight them in the churches and in the pubs. And in
Sam I am.
Moving along.
So anyway, the Ministry of Defense formed the Flying Saucer Working Party to process the flood of new reports coming in around the time. Though the original group concluded that none of the sightings were credible, various departments of the ministry continued investigating reports of strange objects seen in the sky through 2009. Wow.
I thought they'd see them through a telescope.
Yeah. I thought it was going to say, when I was reading that originally, I thought it was going to say, like, you know, through the 1980s. No, 2009. So when a policy change ended the program officially. So anyway, there's a link to some PDFs and to the UK National Archives. You can go find all that stuff.
I watched a few of those UFO shows and unexplained phenomena on Netflix, and a good number of them take place in the UK.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But what shows did you watch? Do you remember?
Oh, I can't remember the names of them. I fumbled through them once in a while.
Sometimes I like looking at those. Yeah.
They come up because I watch, I don't know how this got on my list, but now their algorithm thinks that I really want to watch like Ancient Aliens. Like, no, I don't. No,
oh.
I'd rather watch, you know, Hitler's mega weapons than that.
Yeah. I literally the other day, speaking of algorithms, I was talking to my dad, I got extensor tendonitis on the top of my foot and it swole up and everything. And so I hadn't been running for the last couple of weeks. And I was like, you know what? I was thinking, now that's starting to heal, I need to get some new running shoes. Cause I've had mine for a while. I put some miles on them and just talking to him about it. Next thing I know, I pulled up, I got a Kindle, tablet.
Yeah.
And the splash screen is the ad. I didn't pay to remove
it's
the ad.
Listening it was, all the
it was,
time.
It was for
shoes,
running shoes. And it wasn't just any running shoes. It was the running, the
I'm
same brand I've got.
Listening. Yeah.
I was like, okay.
No, it's
that was
no
just,
accident.
I'm sure it's not an accident. That was a little. I didn't like
a little
that.
Invasion of privacy kind of thing going on there, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, part of me is like, well, it's a personalized ad. The other part of me is like, yeah, it's a personalized ad. That's a little freaky.
Have you been looking at other running gear or sports gear or anything that could lead to a conclusion that you wanted shoes? Or was it verbal only for the last, like the only instance of that in the last 6 months?
And I haven't searched for anything, especially I wouldn't go pulling up running shoes on Amazon. Well, no, I haven't. I think I can look at my history here and tell you, it's like nothing. It's like keyboards. I was looking at mechanical keyboards and yeah, it's okay. That kind of
we're
stuff.
We're going to try that because we've got an Alexa and we'll walk around and mention some random thing that we wouldn't ordinarily buy. We got to think about what that would be. This could be fun.
And a then 50 we'll see. Gallon.
No, no, no. No, that's Keith Lane's trick. And he did a search and that ruined his search results. Something unobtrusive like a circular saw or something, you know, just because I have not been looking at power tools forever. And so.
Well, it's one thing if I searched Amazon and they source some other things to go, hey, this might be what you want. But unsolicited, I've not searched for any running gear at all on Amazon. Which is weird.
Yeah, just like wander around the house and go, you know, I think I need a new circular saw. See what happens. Okay. All right. That brings us to the end of the show. We've got our question of the week for you, though. Something to think about if you're watching live or you're listening to this on podcast form or video or whatever. What is a movie that you don't consider to be good, but do consider to be entertaining? And I know what Craig's answer is going to be. You've got some guilty pleasure movies that you bring up regularly. On
I
show.
Do. There's so many that people hate, but I'm like, I don't know. I like it.
So
I'm not going to say anything right now. I'm not going to say anything.
All right, yeah,
I'm not going to say anything right now. Speed Racer.
No, you had some other ones. It was like Hackers, I think, is the other one.
Yeah. Hackers is a guilty pleasure.
Okay. So maybe we'll rephrase it.
I wouldn't say
way.
It was technically accurate, but it's just fun.
What are some of those guilty pleasure movies you got? That brings us to the end of the show. We are done for this week. You can find us over at chuckchat.com and relive 588 shows before this. I don't know. Do we have them all? I thought we were missing some of the early ones.
We're missing like three or four. So if you have them.
Yeah, the celluloid deteriorated on those.
Yeah. During the enhancement process, we lost the source material.
Get a hold of us over on the listener line, 707-530-2428. I actually just put that into the Facebook page. So if you go to Facebook and you want to give us a call or leave us a message, you can do that as well. You can call directly from our Facebook page now.
Oh, I thought I had it on there already.
Okay. I thought so too, but it came up and prompted and said, hey, you want to put that in? I said, sure. So okay. That's the way it goes. You can tell somebody about that. Thank you again to all our Patreon patrons. We'll be recording your show in just a minute after this. So till next week, give us a binary high five, Craig.
All right. 101. See ya.